So no matter what it is, we'll be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Biddle and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation, OU Insider subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts, people who have been waiting months and months and probably in some cases years for this weekend's clash between OU and Michigan. This is certainly the podcast for you. This is another episode of The Oklahoma Drill, a podcast fueled by OU Insider and On3/Rivals. I'm Jesse Crittenden. I'm joined, as always, by Brian Clinton. And Brian, today I don't have any fancy intro. I don't have puns or jokes to make because I am just giddy to talk about OU Michigan. How excited are you, brother? Tell me about it.
10 out of 10. Yeah, I'm ready for this one. I'm excited. I can't wait to... I can't wait for the buildup. Like I can already hear Reese Davis opening up with the College Game Day music, like the opening scene whenever they kick off there at 8 o'clock in the morning. I can hear it. Norman, Oklahoma is that's what every eye in college football will be on Norman on Saturday, and that's how it should be.
It does feel like if you're an OU fan, what more could you ask for? I mean, it's you're welcoming in not only a Big Ten team, but it's Michigan, a team you have played one time in the entire history of your program. You've played them one time, and it was 50 years ago.
Yep.
It's primetime ABC. It's College Game Day hosting on campus. It's a week two matchup with both teams coming off of bad seasons and desperate for a marquee non-conference win. I mean, Brian, I was trying to think. I mean, I was a big OU fan before I started, before I joined the beat 5 years ago, which, good Lord. I was trying to think. I mean, there were some marquee, you know, the OU is known for marquee early season non-conference matchups. I mean, there's all kinds of ones. And the 80s and 90s, I was thinking, you know, Bama in 2003, that was obviously before Bama was Bama. There's Ohio State in 16 and 17. There's Nebraska in 21 and 22. But Brian, at least since those Ohio State games, I don't know if I have been this juiced for a non-conference matchup. And that includes those Nebraska games, which were awesome for the tradition of it. But Nebraska is not the Nebraska of old.
Correct.
And considering the stakes and when this is coming in the Brent Venables era, like, to me, this is, I haven't been this excited for an early season game in quite some time.
Yeah, no, this is as big as it gets. I mean, pretty much period there. Like the only thing that would make this bigger is if the two teams were somehow, if it was like the 1-2 situation that you kind of had last week, except I would argue there's more on the line here. There's just so much pressure on Brent Venables, on John Mateer, on everything to go right for Oklahoma. And then on the other side, like, Michigan's just a couple of years removed from winning a national title. And sure, there's been a change at quarterback or at quarterback. There's been a change at head coach, certainly at quarterback too, but this just feels like, you know what it feels like? It feels like we took a college football game and kept all the fandom, kept all of the awesome things that have happened in the 2000s for college football, but we dropped it back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And it's just two offenses that are going to have to just try and figure things out and two defenses that are chomping and ready to get at it. So, yeah, this is pretty big. I can't remember. I would say this has to be the biggest non-conference game since Columbus, since OU went to Columbus, for sure.
Well, and think about not only that, I mean, there's compelling storylines on the field. I mean, you've got John Mateer, who's an early Heisman candidate, against the number one overall prospect in the 25 class, and Bryce Underwood. I mean, and this is kind of a huge prove it game for both of these guys.
Yes.
So I mean, there's just so
not
many
to mention Sharon Moore coming back home. Like, there's smaller off the field things like that too. So
there's just so many things. And I mean, normally, I mean, we're recording this on Thursday or Thursday evening, which the Cowboys and the Eagles tip off in an hour or kick off in an hour. So I'm excited for my dreams to be slashed in 3 or 4 hours, because the Cowboys are going to get ransacked. But typically we would talk about the previous game, because there has been a game. Oh, we played a game since the last time we talked. They beat Illinois State in a game that I think will be hard for me to remember 6 months from now, 7 months from now, that it happened. But OU did. They played a game and they won it. Normally we would talk about that game, and I we'll incorporate some of that into previewing this Michigan game. I don't know if there's that much to say about that Illinois State game. OU didn't cover, so actually they're not a great team because they didn't cover. That's the hot take. Brian, there's so many ways that I want to break this down, but I want to start, and we can incorporate the Illinois State game in this a little bit. But like, to me, this isn't going to be the make it or break it thing for me, but the thing that I am probably most interested, curious to watch is, can OU run the football?
Oh yeah.
Can OU run the football against this Michigan front? All kinds of weird things with the running back rotation again, because that just never ends. There's just always weird things with the running back rotation. Mm-hmm. Not to mention offensive line concerns. This is a Michigan team that, I mean, it was New Mexico, so like, we'll take that for what it's worth. Gave up 50 yards on less than 2 yards of carry last weekend. Yeah. This is not the Michigan team, or, you know, this isn't, you know, the dominant 23 team, and this isn't the same even defense from last year, but this is still a defense that ranked, I think they were top 20 in both scoring and total defense a year ago. They've got some of those pieces. I think in some ways this defense might be better than it was a year ago. That's, I think, to me, and we'll get into some of the other stuff, but to me, I'm like, can OU run the football, and what does the running back rotation look like? I think that's maybe the biggest thing for me. What do you see?
Well, and I think just from a game plan perspective, Oklahoma needing to be able to run the football efficiently, it is probably, it's one of the top, it's the top offensive key for OU. I think what it does, you have to be able to run the football to stay on the field. You can't have the defense out there on the, like, I know Bryce Underwood's a young quarterback. He's coming into Norman, but like, if you're not able to run the football and you've got angst building up in the fan base, and it just, it doesn't have the juice that you want it to, like, eventually Bryce Underwood's not the kind of guy that you want to just continue to give chance after chance after chance after chance, because he is so talented. So I think they need to be able to run the football. Another key, and I just mentioned it, the fans are going to have a real opportunity to, like, really make Oklahoma feel like, if there was ever a chance that you, for Oklahoma fans to see the ranking in hardest places to play elevated, like, this is your opportunity to, like, that point to that game, because there's a real chance for the fans to play a real, real pivotal role here.
I'm usually not even that interested in talking about, like, student section or fans who's leaving
either
at halftime.
Yeah,
I'm like, typically not. Having said that, I agree with you. Like, to me, if you're an OU fan and you're coming to the game, like, this is, what else are you looking for? What else are you, I mean, like, this is the game to be, like, obnoxious and rowdy. Yes. And, I mean, yeah. And I do, I mean, you get maybe the most pivotal game in Brent Venables' tenure. You get it at home in year four.
Home. With a true freshman quarterback coming in, like, it's a night game. Game days, like, yeah, it all just sets up for it just to be this huge spectacle.
I want to talk a little bit more about the running game, because, man, it's like, am I like, oh my God, everything's a disaster. This offensive line is going to be terrible. And DeMarco Murray is the worst coach in the world after last weekend. Like, no. No, I'm not. Having said that,
that's not what you said before the pod started.
You're supposed to. That was off the record. That was off the record. Having said that, like, even when I compare the running back rotation to what Emmett Jones did at receiver, in terms of like, I was shocked that there wasn't more rotation at receiver outside of Deion Burks, Keontez Lewis, and Isaiah Cetania. The other receivers played 16 snaps total. There was like a clear, like, yeah, this might be Illinois State, but like, we're playing our guys.
And I think that might be more Ben Arbuckle than anything else.
That's true. That's very fair.
Because that aligns with kind of what we saw at Washington State. But I was surprised, to be honest, I was surprised too.
Which to me says, if you're looking at how OU is going to game plan this, like, I'm curious about, you know, I think, you know, Javonte Gibson among a few other guys, I don't really know what to expect this weekend. But to me, that's like, OU's not, I mean, it could change, but like, based on what happened against Illinois State, I'm not expecting Zion Kearney, Elijah Thomas, like, I'm not expecting those guys to play a lot. So, but you contrast that with the way the running back rotation was handled. And to me, it was like the part of the value of that Illinois State game was like, that's your one game to get guys on the field to see what they look like on tape before Michigan. Yeah. So like, yeah, it's Illinois State. You're not going to play your starters a billion snaps probably, but that's what, like, to me, it's just not ideal that you go with Javonte Barnes, who just wasn't, what's the nice way to put it? Effective? That's a nice way to put it. Toy Blaylock looked awesome, but was injured. And I think his status for Saturday was, let's say, questionable at best. I don't even want to focus on this too much, but I just didn't understand Jay not playing four snaps.
Yeah.
To me, and part of that, and like, if he's like, because to me, that's like, if he's hurt, if he's really hurt, don't play him. If he can play, there's a middle ground between don't play him and give him 30 carries. Like, there's a middle ground there. And to me, I just, part of my question about this weekend is, are you just throwing Jay Knott out there for 20 carries? Like, is that, you go from basically not playing to throwing him out there for 90% of the work? I just don't know what to expect there.
Well, and I'm not this, there's nothing, this isn't sourced. There's no information behind this. I'm just saying, from a logical standpoint, the only thing that would make sense to throw him out there for four plays is if he was injured to the point that he's not going to play against Michigan, but you're forcing Michigan to have to say, okay, he played a few snaps, we need to be ready for him. Like, it's just one more thing to focus on if he's not even playing. But like, that doesn't seem like it's the case. So, and Javonte, like, look, Javonte Barnes, when you have the advantage and you're able to just run gap scheme stuff and he knows exactly where he needs to go and like, he can hit the hole and it's there and it's somewhat clean. Like, the guy, when he gets ahead of steam, he is good. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, if the picture gets foggy at all, if there's any murkiness to the run game, I just feel like his vision to this point, we have seen what we've seen, and he ends up running into the backs of his offensive linemen. And he just, you don't see him run to grass like some of the other guys on that rotation do. So I, for one, like, I understand he had a great camp. He's not your best guy in a game like this. Michigan's front seven is the strength of their defense. If you're gonna run the football, you're gonna need a guy that can make somebody miss at the point of attack, and that's Jade Knott. It's Jade Knott, and if it's not Jade Knott, it would have been Torrey Blaylock. I don't know, man. Yeah, I'll say this: if Javonte Barnes is the guy that has the most carries for the game, I would be shocked and a little disappointed.
I think to your point, I think the best way to put it about Javonte Barnes is if your identity is a hard-nosed run the football team and you've got an offensive line that can consistently create push in the running game and you can run between the tackles and your identity is, you know, controlling the clock and just running the ball down people's throats, he can do that.
Yeah,
he can do that. But
and that's what they want to be that.
Right.
They're just not that right now.
No, they're not. And I think there's two things going against him. If your offensive line is not creating solid push in the running game, that's one. If they're not, then you need to be able to, like you said, be shifty, make guys miss. That's not him. And I think when you go back and so it's like I when fans say Javonte Barnes sucks, and like I get it because it doesn't look good. Like there's reasons to it, and I think it's just being that
more
like,
nuanced than that. But yes,
it is. Like to me, watching him yesterday and watching him for a lot of his career, it's at times it's just seemed like trying to push a square peg through a round hole.
Exactly
is what it, you know.
Yes, exactly.
So to build on that, but there's a part of me that's like, I think you could have given Jade not 8 to 10 carries last weekend.
Yeah.
But because now you come into this weekend, and especially if Torrey Blaylock's not able to play, like there are ways that Ben Arbuckle and John Mateer can scheme their way around if the running game isn't super effective. They can get the ball out quickly. They can get the ball side to side. They can involve John Mateer more in the running game, which we barely saw last weekend. He had 7 carries. We saw, and a couple of those were, you know, getting outside the pocket, scrambling, making guys miss. Yeah. You can involve him more in the running game to keep Michigan off balance. So like, I'm not saying like if OU can't run the ball effectively, that I don't think that's like a death sentence,
right?
But to me, it's like they're going to need to be able to run the ball a little bit. And I just now you're and so on top of like if you're going to give Jay Knott the vast majority of carries against this Michigan front. And basically his OU debut last week almost doesn't count. On top of that, you look at this offensive line, and I don't know how you felt about the offensive line. The pass blocking was good. The run blocking wasn't as good. They were missing Derek Simmons, Heath Ozaida, Michael Fasusi. I think those guys will play. I don't know if Jacob Sexton's going to play, which, I mean, it's just a tough situation for Jacob Sexton.
Do you have the snap numbers for last week on standby by chance?
I don't, but I remember them semi well enough. What's your question?
Well, I was just curious how much rotation there was overall.
They're actually more than you would think. Like Eddie Pierre-Louis, I don't think he cracked 20 snaps.
Oh wow!
Last week, Ryan Foje played a lot. Ryan Foje played a lot.
Okay.
So actually a decent amount of rotation. Like a few guys played a lot of the snaps. Like Luke Baklenko played almost every snap. Logan Howland played every snap. Fabechi Wiwu played almost every snap. So a lot of the rotation came at those guard spots, and then Baklenko played a lot because Jacob Sexton got knocked out of the game.
Right.
So, but to me, again, it's like a question because if Jacob Sexton's not able to go, which I'd be surprised if he is, at left tackle, you're going with either Luke Baklenko or Michael Fasusi. You're either going with, you know, a guy that I don't think was expected to play a ton if everybody's healthy in Baklenko, and you're either going with him or you're going with a true freshman who has the ceiling that is crashed through the roof. It's so high, but you're asking him to play his first snaps against this Michigan front seven. It's just, it's a tall task.
Yeah.
It's a tall task.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. And like, this kind of ties back into what we were talking about with the running game. If you've got a guy like Fasusi in there, Javonte Barnes may not be your best ball carrier, but he probably is one of your better options whenever it comes to pass pro, to helping out with that, picking up somebody. So like, I could see a world where if Fasusi's got to be your guy there just for the insurance policy, you have a guy like Barnes back there to help with some pass protection if they need it. Now, I'll say this. My thoughts on the offensive line last week, I don't care that it's vanilla. Like, you hear that, like, that was kind of the built-in, baked-in excuse. It was vanilla. It was, you should be able to push Illinois State around. You just should. Guys were injured. Guys were hurt. I understand that. But, like, it is concerning. To say the least. Now, does having three of your starting five guys out make a huge difference? You bet it does. Absolutely. No question about it. And I think that getting a guy like Simmons and a guy like Fasusi, for example, back in there could really help round things out. And there's probably some other scheme stuff that we didn't see that they feel really good about. So we'll see how all that plays out. But at the end of the day, I think the offensive line, they need to give Mateer some time. And I think with what Mateer brings in the quarterback run game, I think you saw even last year against Alabama, for example, even when the offensive line was really struggling, having a quarterback that is a threat to run the football really opens up your options and helps. And so I'm not as concerned maybe as some of the other people out there are about it, just because I think what Mateer brings you in the running game is just, I think it really opens up the playbook for you. So offensive line, I would expect, does look a lot better this week. And if Mateer is unleashed a little bit more in the running game, I wouldn't be surprised if it looks a lot better than you maybe expect.
The way that it was vanilla was that they didn't do a ton. We didn't see a ton of formations. We didn't see a ton of pre-snap motion. No. We didn't see John Mateer a lot in the running game. Like, those are the ways that it was vanilla. It wasn't vanilla in that the offensive line was told, don't create movement in the running game.
Exactly.
But I do think I do.
Unless they were playing 3D chess. I mean,
God, that would even be 3D. That would be like 9D. Minecraft. I don't even know what that would be. I just have to imagine that even if you can feel more confident about the offensive line, I can't imagine that the game plan is going to be centered around, we are going to be dominant up front, so we're going to run it down their throats 30 times. So yeah. Having said that, I do think we will see more Mateer in the running game, I think almost out of necessity. I do think we'll see more formations. We'll see more pre-snap movement. We did see, like, even you mentioned Javonte Barnes and pass pro. We saw, I think, a couple of snaps of two running back sets.
Mm-hmm.
That could be factored in. We could see more. We did see some two tight end sets. I think that stuff could be sprinkled in. And I'll be curious to see after the first couple of drives how much OU sprinkles that kind of stuff in more, depending on the way the offensive line is holding up.
Yeah.
Having said that, I don't see a world where John Mateer isn't kind of the world isn't on his shoulders to win this game. I think he's gonna have to throw the ball a lot. I think he's gonna have to run the ball a lot. And this is like, I found real optimism. I think there is real stock to put into how Keontez Lewis looked last week. I don't know how you could lead the OU in every receiving category, including targets, and not put stock into that.
Yeah.
Deion Burks looked good on the perimeter.
Sure did. I honestly liked him there better than I did.
I did too.
In the slot. I mean, I think he just fits there better.
I agree. Satania wasn't super involved in the slot. I think that'll change. I mean, Jaron Canick, outside of the fumble, I liked how involved he was. But this is like, those guys are going to have to step up, Brian.
Yep.
But really, they are. And, you know, especially if OU has to put more guys close to the line of scrimmage, you know, to against that Michigan front seven, like, you're going to need Deion to win some one-on-ones. You're going to need Keontez Lewis to win some one-on-ones. Yeah. I mean, that's just, and I do think this might be a game where John Mateer, both because of dialed quarterback runs and also getting outside the pocket. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this is a game where he carries the ball 13, 14, 15 times.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, here's the thing, like, looking at things from the offensive perspective, from speaking directly to the fan base here on the first thing, one, what you saw last week, I think most of it was just like trolling, but like this has been Arbuckle's offense, or like, you're going to see what Ben Arbuckle's offense looks like this week. Like the pre-snap motion, the eye candy, the formation changes, the things that make it difficult for a defense to stay on task. Mm-hmm. Things are going to look a lot different. Two, this is the game that you paid John Mateer for. This is the kind of game that you went out and you paid John Mateer what you did for him to come to Oklahoma. Like, plain and simple.
Jay Knott, game.
Exactly. Like, these, whenever you look at this game, where it sits, you win this game. I mean, you win this game, you probably feel pretty good. You feel pretty good about going into the ability to go into Dallas against Texas undefeated. Now, I'm not saying that Auburn's not going to be a tough game. It is, but like, this is the game that sets you up for the rest of your schedule, and this is why you went out and paid the money that you did in the transfer portal. So, yeah, you said it best, John Mateer. The weight of the world's on his shoulders. This is when you see what he is. What he's going to be capable of.
Well, it's the reason why I put, when I did my schedule series during the offseason, ranking every opponent, not only just by difficulty, but by significance of the mm-hmm. game for the season. So I put Michigan number one. I mean, it's not only just about the Brent Venables part of it, which we'll talk about here in a bit, but it's because you brought John Mateer in to be the guy that's, I mean, if you want to be known as one of the most explosive dynamic players in college football, this is the game to show out. Jay Knott, you went out and got Jay Knott to be a bell cow kind of guy in situations like this. I am, even with the running game concerns, I don't think OU is going to put up 50 points. And I am, you know, Michigan's defense was, I think it was up and down last week. They picked off New Mexico three times, under 5 yards per completion. So, like, you know, this is a good defense. This is a good front seven. I do think OU is going to have some success. I do. I think Ben Arbuckle will scheme things enough. Yeah. I think they'll be able to keep Michigan off balance enough to score some points. I am fascinated by Brent Venables in this defense, they're going to do against Bryce Underwood in this offense. Yeah. If there was a time, I know it's early in the year and you still have 10 games after this, but like, there isn't, you don't pull any punches for a game like this. I mean, this should be Brent Venables. This should be the blankest of canvases for him to throw whatever paint he wants on that canvas.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things that really interest me, but when you look at this defense against Michigan's offense and Bryce Underwood specifically, what stands out to you? What are the key areas? All that stuff.
What did Oklahoma hold Illinois State to? It was like 32 passing yards.
Yeah, 37 total yards in the second half.
30, yeah. So like, here's the thing. When Brent Venables came back to Oklahoma, and we've talked about this in numerous pods, just the shift in culture on the defensive side of the ball is like day and night. It's totally different. Coming into this game, if it weren't for just the crazy amount of turnover on the offensive side of the ball, like with Arbuckle and Mateer taking the lion's share of that, I think this would be the most fascinating matchup pretty much that you're going to find offense versus defense for the entire Saturday. Like what Brent Venables does pressure wise, the pressure packages that he uses that we've seen him use in years past. He is just so creative in how he finds ways to bring pressure. And the fact that he's calling the plays this year on the defensive side of the ball. And I really don't know how many times Oklahoma truly brought pressure against Illinois State. It seemed like there may have been five-man pressure a handful of times, but most of it was stand up for go get the guy in front of you kind of thing. This week, I mean, I would be surprised if they're not throwing enough stuff at Bryce Underwood that he has to call a couple of timeouts. Like, that's the kind of pressure I would imagine, because it's just so – when we've seen it at its best, it's a perfect example. Peyton Bowen coming in and smacking the quarterback in a five-man pressure against Illinois State last week. Like that was maybe the one time, and that was as veiled as it was. I think this is going to be guys on the line of scrimmage coming up, then dropping back. I mean, we saw what it did last year, even when Oklahoma's offense was as terrible as it was. So, like, you were able to stay in games because they're very creative. And I think that seeing where pressure comes and not just from your edges, I think is going to play a huge role. Because when you have safeties, when you've got guys like Kendall Daniels, that have that ability. I mean, it just opens things up big time.
Well, speaking of Kendall Daniels, to your point, I mean, I was going through his numbers last weekend. I didn't see it on film, and it's possible I missed it. I don't think he was sent one time to pressure, not once. If there was anything he was really good at Oklahoma State, for all of the highs and lows, he could go get the quarterback. Yeah. I do think that's like, if you want to talk about how different things will be against Illinois State compared to Michigan, it's going to be using Kendall Daniels in that cheetah spot to do all kinds of things, and especially pressuring the quarterback, which we didn't see a ton of. I am, and to your point, one of the reasons why I'm interested is because of this OU offense is not only just competent, but actually can be explosive in a matchup like this. I wonder what impact, you know, like if OU can get an early lead and if the offense has rhythm. We just didn't see that at any point last year where the defense, except maybe that Bama game, kind of where the defense was able to attack from a position of strength, from having a lead, from having control of the game. That's part of what interests me too. But I think the other thing is, how much does OU's defensive line win the battle up front? Yeah. Because that to me dictates everything. Because if OU doesn't get, if they don't get a ton of push, that does put Brent Venables in a situation to not only mix up a ton of schemes and formations, but to bring blitzes from all kinds of weird positions. I mean, because even we saw a little bit last week, I liked some of, like, there were times where you had Peyton Bowen, Kendall Daniels, and Reggie Powers all on the field at the same time. Mm. And I think this is actually, we've talked about, you know, how many guys on this roster have been in the system 2, 3, 4 years. I think this is where it shows up, because I think this is the game where you've got all kinds of versatile players who can play multiple positions, do multiple things, that have been in Brent Venables' scheme. This is the time to unleash it. Throw out like five safeties or like five, six secondary guys and just confuse the hell out of Bryce Underwood. Like, to me, this is the time, because, and to me, I want, if the defensive line creates push, if it creates push, that just gives Brent Venables again a canvas to do all kinds of things.
Yeah.
If the defensive line doesn't create push, that puts that, what that does to the fabric of Brent Venables' play, it's just super interesting to me.
Well, and that's been the, to the days back in Clemson, even the his first stint at Oklahoma as the defensive coordinator, when the defensive line is able to create pressure, that's really been the backbone of his best defenses. I mean, whenever Dexter Lawrence, and I can't even go, but for example, the the Orange Bowl in 2015, that defensive line was just disgusting. Like, I mean, it's just, and you could bring four-man pressure and get to the quarterback in 3 seconds, but the best part about that was anytime you brought five, I mean, it was, pressure was there now. Like, it was on. And so I think that's where, if you have an elite defensive line, which Oklahoma feels that they do, it shows up in games like this. Because when you bring that fifth man or sixth man into the fold, it forces a young guy like Underwood to make a decision right now. And that's kind of what you're hoping for, to have mistakes come up.
Well, and to me, it's like can OU create pressure with four? Because if they can, then OU's going to... OU's going to win the football game if they can create pressure with four.
I was going to say, I think you could call that key to the game. If OU creates pressure with four-man pressure, like you're probably going to win the football game.
But yeah, OU's going to win the game. Because like to me, it's if you can create pressure with four, like, and when you're talking about how to actually attack Bryce Underwood, like, yeah, do you want him running for his life? Like, sure, absolutely. And you can do that by bringing five, six, like a ton of things. But to me, I actually think because he was mobile in high school. Like he showed a little bit of dual threat ability, but he's more of a passer. And I mean, even last week he had two carries, finished with -5 rushing yards. And again, Michigan was probably being vanilla to some extent too. Mm-hmm. And I do think he can take off. He's athletic, but I think he wants to throw. And to me, the bigger thing is, I actually think the bigger way to do it to maybe cause chaos for him isn't just creating pressure. It's disguising schemes and yes. coverages on the back end of things.
Yeah.
Like where if you can get Bryce Underwood to not be sure of where he's throwing the ball or where the ball needs to get to. If OU ends up being in a position where they've got to send five or six guys consistently to create pressure, I think that to me, that's where you potentially have some issues.
Yeah. Well, you know? Because bringing pressure after the quarterback and playing the run are not, it's not synonymous. Like you can't get all the way upfield. You're going to need to be able to have pressure, with a four man front at times, if you're going to be able to make them one dimensional. And what Oklahoma probably hopes for, I mean, we heard it all off season long. Explosive plays. Like this team needs more explosive plays on offense. The hope for Oklahoma is that its offense is explosive enough to create a lead and forces Michigan to have to throw the football. Because if Michigan's able to hang around and just run the football and hang on to that and play Big Ten, which we've seen them win a national championship recently doing that, if they can just hang on to the ball and get four yards on a cloud of dust, it's going to make it really difficult for Oklahoma to really pull away or make any sort of lead feel worthwhile, because it's going to be hard to get the ball back. Like, I mean, that's just how it plays out. So, yeah, if you're having to commit six guys or five guys every play to getting after Underwood, you're probably in trouble.
That's the other thing too, and which I mentioned, like Bryce Underwood is going to get a lot of the attention, reasonably so. I mean, he's already one of the more talented players in football. And I mean, he's a guy that when you watch him, it's like, yeah, that's a star in the making. Justice Haynes might actually be the more important key here for Oklahoma in terms of how do you limit this Michigan offense? Cause you're absolutely right. I mean, Justice Haynes, I mean, looked phenomenal last weekend. Like, yeah, it was New Mexico, but like, that's almost kind of what you would have wanted for OU, to have a running game that looked like Michigan's did against New Mexico. I think worst case scenario is if Underwood doesn't have all of the pressure to create stuff himself and is able to just hand the ball off to Justice Haynes, because as much as this is the game where OU's elite defensive line should show up, and especially on the interior and with R. Mason Thomas, they're going to give up some runs. Like it's going to happen. It's going to happen. He's going to have some plays where he breaks off for 10 or 15. He's also going to have some plays where it looks like OU has him stopped and he's able to generate two or three more yards because he's big and because he's strong. Right.
Yeah.
I actually think OU's secondary, which not ideal that you're probably not going to have Eli Bowen. You know, Robert Spears Jennings probably needs to play more than he did last weekend. I actually think OU's secondary, and also, you know, Cortland Guillory is going to get picked on a lot, and this is going to be a big game for someone like him. But I actually think OU's secondary can match up with Michigan's pass catchers pretty well.
I do too. I would give them the edge.
Yeah, I probably would too. Which is crazy to, which is a crazy thing to say.
It is.
Because of the secondary issues that OU has had. But to me, it's, I like, you have to do things to make Bryce Underwood have to make plays, because I do think OU, because like we said, I think OU secondary can win those battles. But if you don't put the game in a position where the secondary can win those battles,
right,
that's a so I mean I do think this is going to be a low scoring game, but I do think both these offenses have ways to attack. Yes. I'm really curious about what Venables dials up. I mean, do you load the box, sell out to stop Haynes? And I heard the Eichert and Lehman, which their pod was phenomenal, talk about that too. Do you load the box, sell out to stop Haynes, force Underwood to make play? Like, there's pros and cons to whatever, to however OU tries to game plan this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's as obvious as sell out to stop Haynes. I don't think it's going to work like that.
No, I and here's the thing. Like, I would expect, I don't really see any guy. I didn't see any guys from a Michigan perspective, and you know, this is just because you're playing comparatively to the some of the receivers that Oklahoma had to cover last year in this SEC. Just crazy NFL. But anyways, those guys that they've got out wide, I would not be surprised if you're playing press to get some guys up near the line of scrimmage a little bit more and feeling better about that, so that you've got guys close to help and run fits. And I also wouldn't be surprised if you do see them kind of sneak up one of their safeties into the box some. Now, just because he's in the box before the snap doesn't mean the picture's not going to change.
Right.
And that's where I think the game plan probably has to be. I would imagine, and this would never be said or this would never be admitted, you should be able to go out and beat Illinois State. This was the game that you were planning
right.
for from a defense. So like whenever it comes to changing the picture and confusing a quarterback, this was the one that you've been waiting for. And I would imagine it's going to be as, what's the word I'm looking for? It's going to be as chaotic on the defense, as much controlled chaos on the defensive side of the ball that you've seen in a little while. I would imagine the picture changes a lot.
Well, like you mentioned, you don't overlook any opponent, whatever coach speak. But if anybody doesn't think that this coaching staff hasn't been focused on this game specifically for months now,
yes,
because and that's why I think to tie it all together about how big this game really is and what it means for, I mean, both programs, but specifically sure. OU this season.
Yeah.
Is this a must win in the sense that if OU loses the game, that the season's over, call it quits on Brent Venables' tenure, it's all gone to hell? Like, no, I don't. I mean, OU could lose this game and go 11-1 and everything feels peachy and they make the playoff and right. Like that is like a possibility.
Yeah.
Even though if they lose this game, they're not going to win out. I don't have to tell people that, but like this is the game, and it's a little unfair because it's this early in the season, but this is the game that it can be the culmination of everything. It can be the culmination of look at Venable's defense and what they did to Michigan's offense, the pressure, the schemes, the disguising blitzes, the guys running all over the field, and this guy did this, and this guy did, and like, Venable's recruiting efforts, the guys he wanted on this defense going out and doing, and just making stuff happen. And then the offense, after a horrible year last year, going out and getting the offensive coordinator and the quarterback that Brent Venables wanted. And then you add Jay Nod on top of that. And, oh, now this is the offense. This is the vision that Venables wanted. And look at what the offense just did against Michigan. And it all came together for an awesome week two win. And now you look forward and it's, hey, if you beat Auburn and you can go into Texas 5-0, and all of a sudden you've got all this momentum and this can be the year. In year four, this is the year it all changes. Like, that path is just there. It is just sitting right there.
Yep.
If you lose this game, and I think not only on top of that, you lose it at home in a marquee spot. Everybody, every college football fan is going to be watching this game.
Not to mention 70-plus recruits.
Recruits. Yeah, actually, I didn't even mention that part of it, just what it could do for recruiting efforts. Might be. I mean, it's one of the biggest recruiting weekends in a long time for Venables. On top of that, but if they lose this game, and particularly, I look, like, is there a reality where OU loses a close game and Michigan just got them on a couple of plays because both these teams are comparable talent-wise, and OU can still have a good season, and they just, you know what, Michigan was just a little bit better on Saturday. Like, that's there. But not only would it be tough to lose this game, but imagine if, like, the offensive line is just bad. Right, like if the offensive line just gets beat up, and if Mateer isn't the explosive guy that OU was hoping he would be for games like this, or even what, you know, if the defense doesn't show up and have, you know, a great performance, and that's what Venables has built this whole foundation on. Like, if things like that happen on top of a loss, I mean, if you're talking about morale, the fan base, I think might be that the undercurrent of all of this is the morale of the fan base. The fan base is still with this team.
Correct.
Despite how bad last year was.
Yes. They're still with Venables.
Yes. Most of them.
Yes.
If you lose this game, and particularly if some of the issues that have propped up or that have cropped up over the first 3 years of Venables' tenure, If they come back and hurt OU and they lose it, that's why, like, to me, it's the biggest game in the sense that it is still early in the season and it's non-SEC play, so, you know, you can bounce back from it, but for momentum, for morale, for all these different things, it's just I just can't, you know, that OU Texas game in 23 was huge, but OU was 6-0 going into that, and It was big to win that game, but that didn't feel as must win as this does, given all of these circumstances. Well, where are you?
Yeah, it's all about narrative. Like, that's what we're talking about. And for Oklahoma fans, myself included, now amongst fans,
that's right. You can talk. Give me the fan. Give me the fan pulse.
The Oklahoma fan base has been through a lot of morale up and down. More morale building during the recruiting phase because you've been able to go out and land those defensive guys that you've been looking for years and years and years. But down so whenever, you know, you go 6-7 in the Big 12 year one. And then you go, as you said, you go 10-3 that second year, and you think you may have a guy in the future in Jackson Arnold, and there's all this hype, and you go 6-7 in the SEC. And there's been all this talk about the SEC and OU going into it and where they fit. And so the fan base has had to say, oh, this isn't Oklahoma football. You guys you don't understand. This is not Oklahoma football. This is not what we've been used to, what we've seen for years, what we've grown up on. And the Michigan game feels like a chance to start recouping that. It feels like a chance to start getting back on this is what Oklahoma football is about. You play strong, tough defense. You are a place where we've watched explosive offenses take over football games for years. Like, it goes back to when offenses were different and it was all laterals and sideways and everything was option based. Like, We have seen it for years and years and years and decades that Oklahoma plays strong, hard-nosed defense and has an explosive offense on the other side. But nobody outside of Oklahoma fans my age or older has really been able to enjoy that in their lifetime. And as you're in the SEC now with all these new, it's like moving schools, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like moving schools. You had all your buddies that you picked on or that you messed with over at this other school, and then you move in and everybody else is as big as you are. They're not thinking anything of you as a threat, or as they're not thinking of you as a guy that demands respect. Well, this is Oklahoma's opportunity to go and get some respect again. And if you win this game, you're on the way. If you lose this game, I see a world where it spirals, maybe not necessarily from a win-loss perspective just yet, but like the proof's in the pudding, guys. Like, we've seen it now at this point. How many times are we going to have to lose these games before we realize this just isn't it? I don't necessarily think that's fair. There's been so much that's played into that, but the narrative is what it is. This is a huge game. You got to win it.
I couldn't have said a lot of that better than myself. And I think just to quickly add on to that, I mean, this is the year it has to come together.
Yeah. You don't have to
win 12 games.
National. Yes. You right. Do not have to be in the semifinal or in the national championship, but there needs to be proof. There needs to be something that you can say that is worth building on.
Yeah. And this is one of those games where, like, does Michigan have the advantage in some places? Yes, they do. This is a Big Ten team with a lot of talent, and they're going to be just as they are. They also had a bad year last year. They're incredibly motivated to come win this game. Like, does Michigan have some advantages? Yes, but from an overall roster talent standpoint, Michigan is not more talented than Oklahoma. There is not some significant talent gap. These teams are pretty comparable. So you're at home. So it's not like, oh, well, if they lost, it's like, well, they just didn't have the talent, right? Oklahoma can compete with Michigan talent-wise, and you're at home. This is year four, and you got the offensive guys you wanted, and you've got the defensive guys that you've recruited to be in this system.
Yep.
This is, like, at some point, if you're serious about, you know, this isn't year one or year two or year three. This is year four. And if you're serious about, hey, we're here to stay in the SEC and we're here, we can win big games. This is the type of game you have to win. Like, it just, yeah. Like, it just is.
You know what? Best way to put it, and this will be my last thought on it, unless you want to share predictions. This is your ROI game. This is your return on investment game. This is it. That's why it feels so big, because you've pushed all the chips in the middle of the table. This is where you say, see, there is change coming. There is, you can point to something and say, there's the return that we've been looking for.
Perfect way to say it. And to close that, I mean, if you win this game, think about how much OU fans and the program, the team can puff their chest when Auburn comes to town.
Yep.
They go play Texas.
Yep.
If you lose that game, now all of a sudden you're on your heels.
Pressure. Yep.
You're on your heels going forward. Perfect way to put it. Your prediction. I haven't even made one. I haven't really thought about it, to be honest with you. I could come back to eat this. I think Oklahoma wins 21-17.
Okay. Oklahoma 27, Michigan 23.
Both by four?
Yeah.
Both our predictions by four?
Yeah. Yeah, not covering, but winning.
I think not only would fans take that, I mean, win by one. Win by .1.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're Oklahoma.
Hey, 27-23. That's what it's going to be.
That's what you're stamping it in now. Sealing that up.
That's what it's going to be. Ain't no guess.
And with that stamp, with that inked prediction, that's going to do it for us here. on this episode of the Oklahoma Drill. Appreciate you guys tuning in as always. Make sure to like and subscribe here at this OU Insider YouTube channel. Become a VIP member over at OU Insider today. We'll have all kinds of coverage, both leading up to the game, the day of the game, after the game. We'll be back here next week for another episode of the Oklahoma Drill to either talk about maybe the biggest win of Brent Venables' tenure or trying to pick up the pieces on a really gut-wrenching loss. We'll find out on Saturday, 6:30 p.m. ABC, College Game Day, coming to OU's campus. I mean, it is the marquee game of the week of the week two slate. It just is. And we'll have you here. We'll have you covered here, both here on this YouTube channel and over at OU Insider. Appreciate you guys as always. Appreciate you, Brian, as always, as part of the Navy dark shirt crew. We'll be back next week for another installment of the Oklahoma Drill. Until then, you guys take care.